SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
No need for coffee to start off a Monday morning. Live right here in hour number two of the Early Line on Sports Grid, because it is time to give you our full reactions to the college football playoff, the final year of 10 in this four-team format to determine a college football national champion. And after Selection Sunday in the group of four here in 2023, there is plenty to discuss and yell, in my estimation, about. I am Ben Stevens. He is Donnie Wrightside. Thank you for joining us here all across the Sports Grid Network to start off a new week. Let's start just with the logistics. The four teams in to the college football playoff, the two teams left out at 5-6, and mainly that team at 5th in the country. Number one, Michigan, a perfect undefeated 13-0 run on their way to their third consecutive Big Ten title. A perfect undefeated Power 5 conference champion. Number two, Washington, after the upset on Friday night in Vegas in the Pac-12 championship game, the Huskies, a perfect undefeated 13-0 Power 5 conference champion. Texas, a big victory in the Big 12 title. They're the number three team in the country. And at number four, the 12-1 SEC champion, Alabama, after knocking off Georgia in the SEC title game on Saturday afternoon in Atlanta, handing the Bulldogs just their first loss in their last 30 games, the Crimson Tide take the four spot, which means Florida State is left on the outside looking in. Before we get your reactions, DRS, let's welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience. Hour number two of the Early Line on this Monday. It's Ben. It's Donnie. You're listening on Sirius XM, channel 159. You might want to turn the volume down just slightly because I'm going to yell. We thank you for joining us here and all of our other radio terrestrial affiliates. Our reactions to the college football playoff in the group of four that made the CFP in 2023. Donnie, the floor is yours.
Outside of Tallahassee, this was a massive win for the public here. Casual football fans, hardcore college football fans, the committee absolutely nailed this. And this was the worry I have. This is the same committee that told us Ohio State was the best football team in the country, and we laughed at it. So I said to myself, do we actually expect competency coming out of this committee here? And I was fully expecting Florida State to get in from all the models and everything that they were progressing up to. But I said to myself, if this committee, which is human, which means they have eyeballs, watched Florida State the past 2 weeks at quarterback and said, we can't put this in. Now, also, I preface this by saying college football is just about money. Division 1A college football, right? The FBS, it's just about money. FCS, Division 2, Division 3, they're about equal and fairness here. You have a college football playoff structure. There's no bowl system. We're going to put the best teams in it based on record. Division 1A football does not do that here. And also, TV executives would say, how can we re-up in the college football playoff and what can we charge networks? They knew full well. It's why we always have Notre Dame. Hey, is Notre Dame at four losses? How can we squeak them into the national championship picture? Not because they can win a national championship, because they can't. It's because people will tune their TV in and watch. Now, I always like to say, I'm a common man in college football at this point here. I love to watch big games here. And the joke for me last week, Ben, entering into was, I was railing so hard against Florida State getting in because I just want to sit on my couch and watch great football games that are compelling to me. If Florida State made it in, it was a game I probably wouldn't even watch, and I would have felt cheated here because I want to watch the best football games here. It's not Florida State's fault that they got left on the side. It's college football's bowl system, which led them on the side. That's where I'll start here. And again, I always say this. If we never had an injury to Jordan Travis, everybody would love Florida State in the playoff.
Completely agree, Donnie. And that's where I will begin as well with what you just said. The injury to Jordan Travis, week number 11 of this college football season, is the only reason that Florida State is outside of the college football playoff. Because Florida State played 13 games, FSU won all 13 games. Florida State played three top 25 opponents in the final CFP rankings. Florida State won all three of those top 25 games, including in the ACC championship game against Louisville, in which Florida State played in a Power 5 conference title game, and Florida State won that Power 5 conference championship game. There have been 15 undefeated, perfect 13-0, or at least undefeated, Power 5 conference champions in the 10-year history of the college football playoff, including three this season: Michigan, Washington, and Florida State. The Seminoles are now the only team in that group of 15 that has been left out of the college football playoff. Where we agree, Donnie, is the idea that TV money is the only driving force in college football. It is why we have sweeping changes to the landscape of collegiate athletics beginning in 2024. It is the only reason we see conference realignment and what it does to this illustrious sport and really all of college athletics. And that is a huge driving factor behind the decisions that were made yesterday to put Alabama in and keep Florida State out. That I will agree with. But Donnie, in the last couple of weeks, you were railing for Florida State not to get into the college football playoff. But on Friday, you were going to wear the red and black of the Louisville Cardinals because even you, Donnie Wrightside, believe that the game result should matter. That if Florida State was fraudulent with a backup quarterback in Tate Rodemaker, then a third string quarterback in Brock Glenn, it would be easy for the Louisville Cardinals to knock them out and let the result of a football game matter. Not TV executives, not what is said in a boardroom, not an injury to a starting quarterback. The result of a football game. Because after all, the reason we sit in these spots, the reason that we love sports, is because of the idea of overcoming adversity as a team, not an individual, a team. And that is what Florida State did. The 100 plus other people that rallied around their star quarterback, Jordan Travis, being taken out for the remainder of this year and went on the road to the swamp and knocked off a rival, covered, by the way, as a 6.5 point road favorite, and won an ACC championship game with a third string quarterback who had attempted four career passes entering Saturday night in Charlotte. Overcoming adversity, wins and losses in games mattering. All of that was thrown out the window yesterday by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. Never let them tell you that wins matter, that games matter, that winning all of your games matter, that losses matter, because that is the fallacy that the College Football Playoff Selection Committee confirmed yesterday, Donnie Wrightside.
And I hear it. It's all valid points here. And again, Division 1A football, which is the FBS, always gets it wrong here. Now, maybe it'll start to correct itself next year. We'll see if that happens. But the simple fact of the matter is, if Rodemaker looked any part against Florida, that would have been a bonus. Him getting hurt hurt them. If Glenn looked any bit the part on Saturday, they would be in the college football playoff. They're bad at quarterback. They made the right decision to leave them out. And hey, Florida State, you're going to the Orange Bowl against Georgia. Love the bowl system. It rocks.
If you would have seen Kirby Smart and Mike Norvell's reactions in the introductory press conference for the Orange Bowl, they would disagree. Plenty more CFB reacts next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Somebody tell my cardiologist and my doctor my blood pressure is going to spike today and my heart rate is not going down. We continue the college football playoff conversation, our reaction to conference championship weekend, and ultimately Selection Sunday that determined the four teams playing in the college football playoff in the 10th and final year of this fraudulent four-team system. Again, without yelling, number one is Michigan, number two is Washington, number three is Texas, number four is Alabama. Michigan and Alabama, the one versus four matchup, will be the first college football playoff semifinal on New Year's Day, January 1st, 2024, the granddaddy of them all. Under the San Gabriel Mountains in Pasadena, California, it's the Rose Bowl, and that is going to be a marquee matchup. Number two, Washington, will play host to number three, Texas. That's the nightcap of the college football playoff semifinal on New Year's Day. It's in New Orleans at the Sugar Bowl. Again, a great matchup. And I will just say, despite all of my heat in vitriol in believing what happened to Florida State yesterday sets a dangerous and travesty-like precedent for the college football playoff and the sport as a whole. Those two semifinal games are going to be sensational. Michigan opens up as a very slight favorite, laying a 1.5 against Alabama. Texas, a 4.5-point favorite against Washington, Donnie.
I love where these games are setting up, by the way. I think they're going to be fantastic. And the fact of the matter is they're not on December 31st. They're on January 1st. I mean, you talk about the Rose Bowl. As they always say, what, Ben? The single most lucrative spot in sports you can be in is that time during January 1. And then we're going to give us Michigan and Alabama. And that's going to be absolutely so much fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And again, getting out of vitriol, there's other bowls. We see, you know, the ACC was slow playing it yesterday. I don't know if they wanted a legal injunction going against the, you know, BCS or whatever, going after it. So it was kind of fun to watch that play out. But I think the two games that when all it settles, and again, everybody's hot and bothered, FSU's not here. They have a chance to, I guess, rectify the situation and go out and beat Georgia and say, see, this is why we should have been in the college football playoff. But if we just remove ourselves, I don't think there's any football fans, and I say this, outside of Tallahassee, that are going to pull up on this on January 1st and go, man, if Florida State was in, this would be so much better. Like, no, these are 10-bell heavyweight games that we're going to get. Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch and play out and certainly talk about over the next month.
I think two things can live in harmony: watching the actual football game and enjoying that, hating the process and the decision-making that led to this group of four. Let's look back on conference championship weekend, why we even got to this stage on Sunday afternoon. What an SEC championship game we saw on Saturday in Atlanta. A top 10 tilt, number 8 Alabama, the two-time defending national title winners, number 1 Georgia, facing off in an SEC championship in the fourth time in their histories for the second time in the last 3 years. And like 2021, Alabama pulls off the outright upset. The Crimson Tide, Donnie, have only been booked as an underdog 4 times in the last decade, all against Georgia. They have won 3 of those 4 games outright, including on Saturday, 27-24. Jalen Milroe doing just enough late in the football game, running for a first down that iced it, and the Crimson Tide get the 3-point victory because of that. A 12-1 SEC championship season, undefeated in conference play. Alabama earns the number 4 spot to the college football playoff.
I used to say this every year, too. Like, we have the top 4 who make it in the college football playoff. I do believe the SEC should get 2 of those teams, and the rest can fight for the final 2 spots. Because there is a valid argument for why Georgia's being left out of this. And again, if Alabama won 31-7, hey, you know what, Georgia? Maybe your schedule is a little bit weak. You don't deserve this. But the fact of the matter is they haven't lost in years, and the only teams they ever lose to are the SEC champion Alabama Crimson Tide. And also, they could play devil's advocate, too, which is the importance of the quarterback position. Milroe, and again, this is a stroke of genius by Nick Saban. If they win a national championship, I do think this is the best coaching move in the history of college sports to say, I'm willing to lose a game in South Florida in the rain instead of having Milroe play to teach him a lesson and actually want this position and see that fire get lit in his eyes. Well, after that game, there's been an absolute fire lit under Milroe, and he's been absolutely sensational. But get back to the Georgia point here. Like they said, well, Brock Bowers was really injured, could barely move around. And Ladd McConkey's our best wide receiver. He could barely move around. If we get 3 weeks off and go into the college football playoff completely healthy, we'll probably win the thing. And they're probably right. But yes, sometimes results do matter. And in an SEC championship game, we thought the winner of it would go. We didn't know it would be this tedious heading down the stretch, entering in the season. But hey, by the way, Alabama is not going to lose an SEC game and win the SEC championship. Yeah. Okay, they're the number 1 seed rolling away. They were close to being left out of this. But from the pageantry, and I say this every year, when you watch the SEC championship game, it literally feels like the Super Bowl. The passion that comes out of Atlanta, where it's a year-to-year thing at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, is phenomenal to watch. And this game delivered on every single level, right down to the wire. Great win for Alabama.
Two great defensive performances as well. Neither team allows more than 250 yards through the air. Milroe under 200, but 2 passing touchdowns. Carson Beck just 243, not a single passing score. Both teams averaged less than 3 yards per carry against the other front 7. That was a key matchup entering this football game as well. Now, lost in the conversation of Florida State versus Alabama for that 4th and final spot is Georgia. This was their first loss in their last 30 football games. This is just their second loss in the last 47 football games the Bulldogs have played. And both of those two losses come against the same opponent in a conference championship game, that being Alabama. So Georgia, the two-time defending national champions, will not have an opportunity to make college football history and win their third straight national title, despite being the odds-on favorite to win the SEC before the year, despite being an odds-on favorite to make the college football playoff. That kind of lost in the conversation as well, that a team can lose just their second game in the last 47 of them dating back to 2020 and not even sniff a realistic opportunity to play in the CFP.
It is a shame of it here. And again, next year, we keep saying we shouldn't have to ever say next year here, because every level of college sports gets it right except for this one. Yep. Georgia has every right to say we should be defending this. And if you had a top four right now, they certainly would be in it talent-wise on the field. But just not the way it plays out. There's a lot of subjective stuff. And them playing Florida State in an Orange Bowl here. Typically, say we're going to the Orange Bowl. That is absolutely sensational. Let's go play and let's go win. And then you say, okay, there's no real stakes involved here. Wouldn't this be great? Hey, look at this. Georgia's going to play Florida State in the college football playoff, and Georgia's going to host this football game, and away we go. But we're too stupid here to actually pick it right because of the old antiquated bowl system with money tie-ins and the political, you know, aspects that play into that. We're not going to get to see it. Because you know what would be great? FSU winning the ACC championship, then going in. You know what would be fun? Yes. Tate Rodemaker, let's say he doesn't even play. Let me see how Florida State behind the eight ball can operate with this defense and offense going against a very good football team. That would be fun, but the fact of the matter is that would be sacrificed at the greater good of the game for the top four. But if there was 12 or 24 in, we would love to watch the quote-unquote 13-0 underdog Florida State Seminoles go on their way to a national championship and prove everybody wrong. They just won't get this chance to do that.
That changes next year, starting in 2024, a 12-team college football playoff format. Still need to iron out some of the details in terms of who gets an automatic berth and how that all plays out from an at-large perspective. Texas, big win in the Big 12 title game, 49-21, easily covering as a 14.5 point favorite. Quinn Ewers throws for a Big 12 title game record 452 yards, ties a Big 12 championship game record with four passing scores, all came in the opening half, and they hold Ollie Gordon the second to only 34 rushing yards. He had 120 plus in seven of the last eight for Oklahoma State entering conference championship weekend. Texas, a 4.5 point favorite in the Sugar Bowl, despite being the 3 seed against the 2 seed Washington.
That's going to be fun to watch this play out. And by the way, if anybody watched that Texas Longhorns game, I mean, I think that they're still scoring touchdowns and moving in it well. Ewers was awesome. 46 attempts, 452, a QBR rating of 97.1. I love the fact, by the way, in the college football playoff, we have Michigan and Alabama, almost like those old school blue bloods. But then you have this other outcast game with two fantastic quarterbacks tangling here. Can't wait to watch it.
Plenty more from conference championship weekend and the CFP decisions next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Despite winning all 13 of the football games that Florida State played this year, despite three of them coming against teams that finished the year ranked in the top 25 in the college football playoff rankings, despite winning a Power 5 conference championship, it wasn't enough for FSU to make the college football playoff. Despite winning their conference championship game by double digits, I understand it was only 16-6. I understand that third string quarterback Brock Glenn only threw for 55 yards. But what I don't think people truly understand is they ran for 164 against the only rushing defense in the ACC that allowed less than 100 yards per game this year. And they held that other team on the other side, Louisville, to just 2.8 yards per carry, a Cardinals team that rushed for more than 183 yards per game throughout the season. And despite Brock Glenn starting the ACC title game with backup Tate Rodemaker in concussion protocol, Rodemaker would have been back for a college football playoff. All of that does not matter, obviously, as the only thing that matters is a quarterback breaking his leg in the second to last game of the regular season for Florida State. That same quarterback, a college kid, in Jordan Travis having to tweet out, "I wish I broke my leg earlier so the College Football Playoff Selection Committee could have had a better evaluation of Florida State as a whole," despite the fact that Florida State won on the road against an SEC rival and covered as a 6.5-point favorite and won an ACC title game by double digits after that very quarterback in Jordan Travis suffered his season and career-ending leg injury. None of that matters. Games don't matter. Winning all of your games doesn't matter. Losses don't matter. Championships don't matter. Injuries and TV ratings, that's all that matters.
Yes, and that's what's set up here for the NCAA. And I preface this by saying, too, like I know a lot of people go down back to Cardale Jones and you had an injury there to Ohio State, but we had a belief that there might be something underlying with Cardale Jones. 257 and three scores in a Big Ten championship. It's like, hey, I want to buy in. And I also have the same belief for Florida State. If we got anything out of Rademacher against Florida that was positive, say, you know what? A couple touchdown passes, 275 yards against a horrendous Florida defense that ranks in the bottom of the statistics. Right. But he didn't do anything in that game. Then again, you're asking a true freshman quarterback to come in and save Florida State here in an ACC championship game. That's the position we're saying, just don't lose at Forest. That's what you got. 18 of 21, 55 yards, no touchdown passes, and a QBR of 12.7. That's what the committee saw. And I always go back to the point, if you were watching Saturday night and saying, okay, let me get a peek of this Louisville Florida State game, it was apparent with that quarterback, they just didn't measure up to the top talent in the country. But that never should be what happens here. But that's the way we are with just four teams getting into the College Football Playoff. And also didn't help that Louisville probably should have won that football game, but Jack Plummer actually played like a plumber in that game at a 13.1 QBR. It's a shame because Florida State's defense is talented enough to win a national championship. But sometimes you need style points to move on, as we always talk about. Right. Florida State had negative style points at the quarterback position, and that's what did him in.
Here's the fix for the College Football Playoff. In September, before a game is played, project who's going to get there. Take the four best teams based on the odds. Let's fast forward and play in January. Sound good, Donnie?
Well, I mean, technically, if you started this season with Brock Lenn at quarterback, Florida State might have fired Mike Norvell and say, man, this guy can't
coach.
That's just the way it is. That's the way it is.
All of it is questions. All of it is speculation. What is not is playing 13 football games and winning 13 football games. That's my point, Donnie. We look at the odds here on a sports betting network that project and forecast what is expected and supposed to happen. But the reason the word underdog is in our lexicon is because things that are not anticipated often do happen, and we celebrate. So what was Florida State expected to do after losing their starting quarterback, Jordan Travis? Probably lose one of the football games that they played in. They did not. They won. Both of them. What was Florida State supposed to do? Should we have not heard from Jordan Travis despite the gruesome leg injury? Should we have maybe all said, ooh, Jordan Travis is listed as day-to-day. He could be back by the start of 2024 to play in the College Football Playoff semifinal. Would they have made it then if that was the case on the right side? Because it seems that an injury to one player was the only difference that left Florida State outside of the College Football Playoff. Not a passing defense that ranked top 10 in the country, that held Jack Plummer to a terrible QBR, as you just said. Not a rushing defense that held things down when they needed to against Jawar Jordan and Isaac Garendo, who combined to average 183 yards per game for the Cards this year. Not a running back in Trey Benson that ran for three touchdowns against their bitter SEC rival in the Swamp in Florida to end out the regular season. None of that mattered. An injury to one, a quarterback, was the only difference. What would you have liked, Donnie, sitting there in your ivory tower? This is not a shot at you, but what would you have liked Florida State to do in their final two games without Jordan Travis?
They would have had to win impressively. That's what they would have done. They would have had to, if Rademacher threw for 300 yards against one of the worst defenses in college football, my argument would have changed. Even if Rademacher got knocked out last week with just a concussion because we knew we'd be back. But Rademacher was terrible in that game against Florida. Right. And then the follow up with that with Brock Lund, even worse than Rademacher was. That's what happens. But by the way, here's my preference also. Like yourself, Ben. You love college football bowl season. I can't stand it. I've railed against it for almost 15 years now. It should go away. So shouldn't we be having, like, hey, Florida State, sky's not falling. You're going to the Orange Bowl, baby. You're playing Georgia, national stage. We still get to watch them play again. So we should be happy with that, right? Bowl season is here.
No.
They can get their vindication against Georgia in a big-time bowl game because that's what we love bowls for, right?
Next year, Donnie, in a college football playoff when Florida State would host the G5 highest-ranked team. That was Liberty, by the way, who was a perfect 13-0 despite the worst strength of schedule in college football and yet was awarded for what they had done in winning football games, which is very different than Florida State being left out. Craziness there. Donnie, you talked about watching football games on Saturday night. The number one team in the country that will host the Rose Bowl in the college football playoff. Did you see how many yards they put up against Iowa?
No, I mean, I watched the football game, yes. And by the way, come on, you can't get the 27.5 and clear that team total, Michigan. That's what I'm most upset about.
Right. Florida State outgained Michigan. And this is no knock on the Wolverines. And the Iowa Hawkeyes have a better defense than that of Louisville. But if we're going to use yardage output as the determining key evaluation metric to hold a team out of the college football playoff, then why is Michigan number one? J.J. McCarthy hasn't thrown for over 150 yards in four straight weeks, even in their biggest games of the year. He didn't attempt a pass in the second half against Penn State. And yet they're in, no questions asked. Michigan is deserving of it. Michigan should be there. They're a 13-0 Power 5 undefeated conference champion, as is Florida State. That's my only point, Donnie. If we're going to use yardage, optics, and beauty pageantries, then Michigan shouldn't be there. Washington was a 9.5-point underdog on Friday night in Las Vegas. Just pregame, they shouldn't have been there. They should have got their doors blown off by Oregon. Oh, wait, Washington's been booked as an underdog four times in the last 2 years under head coach Kalen DeBoer when teams expected them not to win a football game. And what have they done? Won outright all four times. Because at the end of the day, the final score and the result of a football game should weigh most importantly in our lives and how we evaluate football programs. And yet yesterday, it did not.
But no, there's some good points to that. But also, Michigan down the stretch handled big-time opponents and certainly handled relatively with ease. Nice win against Penn State, nice win against Ohio State. And basically, you could have just scored probably 3 points, as it turned out, and knocked off Iowa. So they knew the stakes of the game. But again, it's just about optics. We should never play the optics game heading into who should get into the college football playoff or not. And I always say this again, Travis is in. They're going to go to the college football playoff. If Rodemaker showed a pulse, they would be in the college football playoff. They had their chances and opportunities. They won their football games, which is what you're supposed to do. But since we're only left with four teams at the end of it, somebody's going to be a scapegoat. Typically, every year we find it, and it works its way out. Technically, this year it didn't work its way out, which next year we have the college football playoff, and we're going to start getting down this, you know, road of, hey, we're going to give a G5 a spot, because you know what we're going to do next year? We're going to scream it at the top of our lungs when a Liberty gets into the college football playoff as opposed to like a ninth overall Ole Miss in the SEC. It's never going to stop because we seem to like to play these games. It's like, okay, there's enough teams in. Let's just give some scraps to the bottom of the heap here. When no other sport does this but college football, we will always have complaints moving forward. They just won't be as vocal. No. But trust me, when a one-loss Power 5 team that figures they should be getting in and Liberty actually makes it in the college football playoff, they'll be screaming again next year.
Because, Donnie, that would maybe be an argument for what the College Football Playoff Committee decided to use for the first year in its 10-year evaluation process, the best versus the most deserving. Because there was a ton of deserving teams yesterday, they took the best. They have not often been tasked with making those challenging decisions. But if it's about the best, is Georgia not one of the best teams in the country? Is Oregon, outside of playing Washington, not one of the best teams in the country? Why not stop there with Florida State? Is Tate Rodemaker's led Seminoles team better than the Georgia Bulldogs? Is Tate Rodemaker's led FSU team better than the Oregon Ducks? Better than the Penn State Nittany Lions? Better than the Ohio State Buckeyes? Where does the buck stop?
It doesn't stop anywhere until we get a 32-team playoff. That's when the buck's going to stop. Then we can argue about who the 35th team in the country is going to make a run all the way to the national championship. The perfection of the sport we have in NCAA, Ben, is college basketball. It just gets it right. It has enough spots here for underdogs to perform and enough spots for the Power 5 guys. But for some reason, we love this stupid bowl system in college football, and we all pay the price. So for you people out there listening to the show and yell at me for the bowl system, you got exactly what you deserved. Florida State's in a great bowl against Georgia, and nobody cares. Fantastic.
So, on the other side of the break, we'll go back to the NFL. Monday Night Football preview in Duval County. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, I'm happy to talk about the National Football League and give my heart a break from what we just discussed in the college football playoff. Week number 13 of the NFL regular season comes to a close tonight in Jacksonville between the Jaguars and the Bengals on Monday Night Football. Donnie, I start by asking you a question. Do you remember what you were doing in 2011?
I know where I was working and stuff like that, yeah. But... not necessarily what the question is going to be. So what is it?
Were you still owning some pizza franchises around South New Jersey?
Yeah, you don't listen to me, Ben. Hoagies. Come on now.
Hoagies, excuse me. I thought it was all about cheese pizza here on the show. Back in two. I know. That's a good idea. Maybe we'll start something here. Back in 2011, Donnie, I was a junior in high school. That's how long it has been since the Jacksonville Jaguars have last appeared on Monday Night Football.
Wow. You know what? Forget about Florida State not going in the playoff. That is actually surprising, where everybody usually gets around to be in on Monday Night Football. The fact that they have been on a Monday Night Football game since 11 is impressive. And we've seen some horrendous Monday Night Football games. Now, that's a good stat.
Yeah, Cincinnati, by the way, on the road on Monday Night Football, not very good. 3-20, the worst record in those scenarios in NFL history. And that's what we have tonight. For the first time in more than a decade, 12 years exactly, Jacksonville will be featured on Monday Night Football. The Jaguars at home, a 9.5-point favorite against the Cincinnati Bengals, the over-under 39.5. This graphic would probably look different if Joe Burrow was playing still for Cincinnati. But we know because of the wrist injury and having surgery, Joe Burrow is out for the remainder of this 2023 NFL season. And if Joe Burrow was on the graphic and playing in this game, it would be incredibly anticipated entering Monday Night Football. But the Bengals are now below 500. They've lost two straight games. The Jacksonville Jaguars, however, Donnie, are an 8-3 football team playing in Monday Night Football for the first time in more than a decade. And this is the first time all year long Jacksonville will lay at least close to double digits. Just the second time all year they've been a touchdown favorite or more. That's where the Jags enter Duval County tonight on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough scene here for Cincinnati, not only because Joe Burrow is out of this football game, but the Cincinnati defense certainly, Ben, has not performed up to what the capabilities were just a few years ago. Lou Anarumo is a great defensive coordinator. I don't know if he just doesn't have the horses out there to get after it, but when you just take a look, 139 yards on the ground they give up per game, which is 5 yards per carry. Passing, right around 250 a game, 7.6 yards per attempt. So they're getting gashed both, you know, in the run and also the passing game. You take a look at Trevor Lawrence, who is healthy in this game. Travis Etienne banged up, but Doug Peterson said he's going to go tonight. And a talented wide receiver core, and also Ingram at tight end. This offense should be able to move the football. So the question is going to be, yeah, in this game, not necessarily if Jacksonville can win, which I do think they will, can they cover close to double digits? I say to myself, because also, and sometimes you watch football games, right? You saw the Chargers yesterday. Some people might get upset. Chargers stink. They only scored 6 points. No. Chargers, yep, were smart knowing that the Patriots couldn't move the football and just don't mess this up and come away with the victory. That's what I'm looking for Jacksonville tonight. Because, again, we're not on a national stage where we're talking about Florida football, right, with Florida State going, hey, you better win, but win impressively. That doesn't count tonight. If you walk away from this football game for Jacksonville, 9-3 is a victory, they will love that move forward and say, okay, we're going to win this division and head into the playoffs here. That's the way I'm looking at this. And also,
right,
if we do think it's going to be a runaway for the Jacksonville Jaguars, do we think that Browning can lead a comeback. Now, the one thing bright spot you're going to get here, Mixon's going to be healthy for this game. Chase is going to be healthy. And T. Higgins looks like he's going to return back to the lineup. So they do have the weapons, but it's all about the quarterback position. And also, as I said, if Cincinnati, Ben, had a better defense here, I would give them a puncher's chance. I don't think they can win this football game, but also, I don't know if I want to lay close to double digits with Jacksonville, knowing the fact that they might not be ultra aggressive tonight because they should pick up the victory with just a mediocre offensive performance.
Donnie, the only time this year that Jacksonville has been a touchdown favorite or greater was week number 3 in a divisional duel against the Houston Texans. They lost that game outright by 20 points. I think the idea of laying a big spread with Jacksonville is still a little bit precarious. They were a touchdown favorite against the Tennessee Titans just a couple of weeks ago and actually closed below a touchdown at 6.5. They did cover in that football game. Jacksonville is 8-3, however, this year. In all 8 wins, Jacksonville has covered. So if you don't lose outright by 20 as north of a touchdown favorite, well, then you can at least maybe cover a game given the trends of where the Jags are. Now, since he has been booked as an underdog in their last 2 games, including a game for Joe Burrow and the Bengals on the road in Baltimore on a short week on Thursday Night Football. With Joe in, they actually had a lead. With Jake Browning, when he took over for the injured Burrow, they came nowhere close to covering. Last week, as a short, less than a field goal underdog against the Pittsburgh Steelers, since he put up only 10 points and did not cover as an underdog. I still think it is difficult to get a true assessment of where this Bengals team stands with Jake Browning as the starting quarterback. I will say, however, as it pertains to that total, 39.5, again, Jacksonville, around a touchdown favorite, their biggest spreads of the year so far, 6.5 against Tennessee a few weeks ago, week number 3, 7.5-point favorite against the Texans. Both of those games well over this number of 39.5, and both of those games over for Jacksonville. Both of the primetime games we have seen in week 13, Thursday night at the Star in Dallas, last night in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field, have gone over 10 overs now out of the 39 NFL primetime games we have seen so far in 2023.
Yeah, and by the way, there's some attacking points because we haven't seen much of Jake Browning, right? You see him get thrust into the fire against Baltimore where he wasn't supposed to be a starter. And if anybody, look, this isn't high school football. It's like, hey, everybody gets equal amounts. The backup quarterback is basically running the scout team at that point. Yeah, he's in the meetings. Yes, he knows the playbook. And be ready if somebody gets injured, with Burrow was. 8-14 in that game, 1 touchdown pass, but clearly overmatched. Comes back there with some time 10 days later, 19-26 for 227, a touchdown and an interception. Is it mind-blowing? Mm-hmm. Statistics? No, it's not. But now we're looking for, like, okay, I got my start out of the way. We lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now I'm going to go on the road, and there's not a lot of expectations for me to do well. So when you take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook, we're not listing Jake Browning at 176.5 yards. He's right around that 215 number. I think he can have some success because, as we said, they have 2 very good wide receivers. All you have to do sometimes, Ben, is if I'm cleaning the pocket and it's one-on-one coverage, just throw that thing out there, man. These guys will make plays here, and you can move the football. So if there's a betting angle for Jake Browning, it's buying low, where most people would say, oh, he's a backup quarterback, he can't perform. But you'd like to look at the steps here. Got a taste of NFL action against Baltimore, started a game versus Pittsburgh, and he was serviceable. And you should be able to do some things in this game because, as I talked about as well, Jacksonville should be able to score. Maybe Browning doesn't have a great night, but in that fourth quarter, if he's getting 15 passing attempts, he should be able to get his passing prop tonight.
If you think Cincinnati can get the double digits, I think there's a good chance this game does go over because, Donnie, as you alluded to, the Bengals defensively have not been good this year. As you said, the second worst rushing defense in the NFL, giving up more than 139 rushing yards per game. And because the Broncos got off to such a slow start this year defensively, they are always going to rank in the bottom, just based on how the numbers are skewed on game-to-game average. But the Broncos allowed less than 100 yards rushing yesterday to the Texans. Denver has only allowed less than 120 yards per game in their last 3. You could really think of the Bengals as the worst rushing defense in the NFL, and their bottom 10 in terms of passing defense. Last week against the Steelers, Kenny Pickett threw for 278 yards. Trevor Lawrence, in the last three wins for Jacksonville, well over his prop tonight of 244.5, at least 260 yards in all three of those wins. In the two games that Jacksonville has seen the biggest spread in their favor this year, 6.5 a couple of weeks ago against Tennessee, 7.5 in their favor against the Texans. Again, at least 260 passing yards in both of those, well over this number. I think Jacksonville is going to be able to find their offensive output tonight against Cincinnati. That would be my focus. Maybe we don't lay the 9.5 with the Jaguars in their first Monday night football game in more than a decade, but I think that passing yards prop for Trevor Lawrence might be one of my favorites for Monday night football.
And by the way, you know, sometimes we're taking a look at this game individually. Jacksonville's supposed to win here. I like where you're going with what you were just talking about. But let's take a look. Miami, 9 wins. If the season ended today, you know who's going? The Miami Dolphins is the number one overall seed. The Baltimore Ravens, number 2. The Jacksonville Jaguars, 3, because they haven't played their game yet this week. They will be tied technically here in the standings for the number one overall seed. So now you start to formulate that playoff plan and where it goes. But also, as I take a step back, this is one of those football teams that did have some playoff success last year, if you remember that incredible comeback against the Los Angeles Chargers in that game. Now, this year, we're expected to do more. How do you do more? Get home field advantage throughout. I'm not saying they're going to be able to do that, but they're in the legitimate conversation after tonight if we expect them to win, and we do, as close to double-digit favorites. The future for the Jaguars is going to get really interesting, but also means don't get tripped up tonight here. You lose this football game, oh, the Jaguars are a nice story. They'll win the division, or maybe they won't against the Houston Texans, who are right on their heels again. But I'm looking forward to this tonight. I need to see something out of Jacksonville. Be aggressive tonight, win this football game, and find yourself at the top of the standings in the AFC. That's pretty good.
North of a touchdown favorite only one other time this year. Week number 3. They lost by 20. But Jacksonville has covered in all 8 of their wins. So if you follow that math, if they win tonight, maybe they can cover as a near double-digit favorite. You mentioned Travis Etienne. You would think his props look pretty good against the worst rushing defense in the NFL, statistically second worst. But again, we talked about the Denver Broncos part of that conversation. His rushing yards prop, 65.5. Calvin Ridley has found the end zone 2 consecutive weeks. Big for me. I have the over on his touchdown receptions prop for the season at 5.5. He currently has 5. If you're looking at the props tonight, is it only on Jacksonville, or with the return of T. Higgins and Jake Browning making his second start this year, could we see some uptick in that offensive production?
Yes, and I do think we will, because you do have 2 unbelievably talented wide receivers. Now, if you take a look at the touchdown passing prop here, it's 0.5 for Browning, but you are going to be priced out at a -235. I do think Trevor Lawrence, as we stated multiple times already, going up against that weak Cincinnati defense, they'll be able to score. So sometimes you have to say, okay, you don't really like to do parlays that much, but do ones that make sense here. If you think Browning's going to throw a touchdown, there can be some value in that -235. How? Pairing that up possibly with Browning going over 216.5. Or how about this one? Just having some fun here on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Trevor Lawrence over 1.5 touchdown passes. Browning over 0.5 of a touchdown pass. If you parlay that together, it's +145. That's not substantial. You won't be shocked if Browning throws 2 or touchdown pass tonight. He's thrown 2 already here. I believe he threw 1. I want to just double check the statistics here going up against. Yes, he had 1 against Baltimore, which he came in, and then 1 against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He'll throw 1 tonight here. So there are some viable options here from a betting standpoint that you can buy low on and still make some plus money.
Jacksonville has the 4th easiest schedule remaining in the AFC. Still on the docket, the Baltimore Ravens, as you alluded to, with a 9-3 record, they would be right alongside the flock and the Dolphins for the best mark in the AFC. They're a -800 favorite to win the AFC South, a division that is wildly better than we expected it to be before the year, with the Colts and the Texans both at 7-5. Jacksonville's in the running for one of the top spots in the AFC. We'll talk more about Monday Night Football up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line, ending out hour number two of three on the Sports Grid Network. I am Ben. He is Donnie, and the Sports Grid app is always there. You can scan the QR code on your screen in a matter of moments. All of our information and insight available in the palm of your hand. That includes best bets for Monday Night Football. We like to hear from the people out there how they view a game. It helps us inform our opinions as well. So to end out hour number two, for the first time in more than a decade, the Jacksonville Jaguars are playing on Monday Night Football. What does that mean for the people? We find out right now in Fade the Public. At Sports Grid TV on Twitter, what's the best bet for Monday Night Football? The Jaguars laying the biggest number they have all year long, a 9.5-point spread. The Bengals as the underdog covering near double digits. The over of 39.5 or the under of 39.5. Donnie, the people on this Monday night think the strong trends of primetime unders continue in Duval County. The under getting most of the vote, around 34%. The Jags covering as a near double-digit favorite, that second most selected choice.
By the way, and sometimes you take a look at Monday Night Football, right? Because all the, you know, statistics aren't out for us, which means like the prop bets on usually like Thursdays and Fridays. And unless it's a really big game, you sort of hold it off on your card, Ben, and you say, let me get to it on Monday. So the fact of the matter is I voted on this early because the poll came out, I believe, up on X at right around we took showtime. So you know what? It's definitely the under. So I voted that way 33.7%, followed by the over 20.2%, the Bengals 19.9%, and then 27% here for the Jaguars. The reason why I'm bringing this up, Ben, is I'm going to talk myself out to the way I voted on under 39.5. I'm seeing the light here tonight, Ben. I'm seeing we might get some points tonight here. I'm sure, look, hour number three, watch out, because we might be turning this on. Bengals, Bengals, Bengals. Oh, my goodness. Let's go. Now I'm fired up.
Houday, we need some points. Man. I selected over 39.5. All two games of the primetime action this week have gone over. Let's make it a perfect three for three in hour three in less than a minute.